which I have sitting on my desk for that purpose, but I'll be happy to share that book, which I think overlaps with some of the work that he's going to talk about today. Wolfgang is an assistant professor at the Institute for Urban Planning and Spatial Design at the University of Innsbruck, Austria. His main research focus is based on areas where urban systems collide with rural elements. He wrote his doctoral thesis about the superimposition of rural and urban elements and its spatial impact in tourist alpine regions in Austria. His current research is focused on action planning strategies for those urbanized areas. He wants to compare large urban areas such as Toronto with the tourist-focused areas in the Alps. The aim is to identify comparable and non-comparable elements to develop strategies for a sustainable and livable future. Of course, he's seen completely different types of landscapes here by going to places like Detroit. No Alps, no landscape,
no scheme,
just demolition. The talk we hear today is named Turbanized Alpine Regions, Tourism and Urbanization in the Austrian part of the Alps. Of course, as I already said at some other point, it has nothing to do with turbans that one puts on one's head. It has to do with tourism, and we're anxious to hear what Wolfgang has to say. I must add to this introduction that he told me yesterday that the project that he has been involved in, on which the book that I spoke earlier on is a product of, has just won a prize, a very important prize by the Association of Austrian Builders. We have an organization here in the GTA called BILD, which is the same thing. So we're using that same terminology. Which has a research prize, which is given out every 2 years. And he and his team won one of those prizes just recently, so congratulations. It's always nice to see one's work acknowledged in this way. So without further ado,
thank you very much for welcoming me and for the chance to present my work here at the City Institute and at the York University. In the next 1.5 hours, one and a half, I'm not sure how long it will last, I will talk about the Alps as a region in Europe where tourism is a major force in relation to the process of urbanization. In this presentation, I will talk on the one hand on the impact of tourism in the region, and on the other side, I will show you how I, as an architect and urban planner, see the region and how I work with it. And therefore, I have 4 different parts for the presentation. First will be, I will tell you something about your territory. Then the second one, I will go a little bit more detailed into the project Tyrol City. Then I will show you a movie, a 20 minutes lasting movie. It's also part of the project Tyrol City, and I think it's a nice movie just to get an impression what's the region about and what we think about this region. And after the movie, I will focus on a specific place within the region, and I will explain the process of transformation in this place from a rural to an urbanized area. So let's start with the region. The region where I'm focusing on is in Europe. It is within the Alps. It is a part of Austria, so Austria is very small. We have in total more or less 8 to 9 million inhabitants. And the region is part of Austria. It is called Tyrol. The Alps are in general one of those places where tourism plays an important role, and around 11% of the world's tourism is focused in this region. So it's the whole Alps, not only Tyrol. And as a part of the Alps, the region Tyrol is one of the tourism hotspots. When I use the word Tyrol, maybe some of you, perhaps those who are from Europe, or those who have been there, maybe those have picturesque images of alpine landscape in their minds. Images like huge mountains, skiing areas, people yodeling, and other pictures more. And maybe there is no other landscape in Europe engaged with those powerful images, conceivabilities, and sensations like the Alps are. Many people do have feelings of freedom from urban daily life problems when they talk about the Alps. But in reality, you can also find there elements which are related to processes of rapid urbanization. For sure, it's not as extreme as in Los Angeles or in Toronto. It is more like in the Rheintal, which is just next to the region of Tyrol. So housing in the wider valleys, it's a major topic. And another topic is the building of industrial zones. So this is a picture made from the main valley. It's the Inn Valley in Tyrol, and you can see it's the bottom is filled up with industrial zones. So in reality, the reality is a little bit different than those images sold by the tourism industry, or sold by the tourism industry. And here you can see the cover of our book. It's called Tyrol City. You can see in the background a part of a business park. You can find it here as well, so it's nothing different. But you see also in the front this sign where it's written Tyrol City. So Tyrol City does not exist in real. It is in a way a fictional city. It is a name we found for the region of Tyrol. When I say we, then I mean a team of 6 architects and urban planners from Austria, the Netherlands and France. A few years ago, so 5-6 years ago, we wrote this book, Tyrol City, New Urbanity in the Alps. In this book, we describe the whole region as one city system. And in the following, I will describe the content of the book a little bit more detailed. I will describe why we think that the region should be seen as one city. When we started with this project, we were really fascinated by the region of Tyrol. We were fascinated because of its extremes. But those are extremes for us, but not for the majority of inhabitants living in the region, because for them it's part of their daily life. I mean, extremes like the topography, the contrast between the very strong local identity and the influences of the global economy, then Tyrol as an international tourism destination, and also the importance of Tyrol as a link from North to South Europe. So all in all, it's about linkages between super-regional impacts and local circumstances. Additional to these extremes, I will give you some interesting key data. So in the region, we have about 660,000 inhabitants, 9.3 million visitors a year, 10 shopping centers, around 300 houses, so 600,000 inhabitants and 300,000 houses, just to compare these two numbers. And we have one subway in a very small village on the top of the mountains on a sea level of 1,400 meters. It's also a tourism village. And they built a subway at the end of the 80s with 4 stations, very nice names. So we have the parking lot, a bank, church, and ski lift. So these are the most important places in the village. And in the region, it's also an important link between North and South Europe, and the Brenner bus is a major link to Italy. We have there 8.8 million cars a year. And still now, for me, it's very impressive, because more than 1.5 million people per hour can be transported with skiing lifts up to the mountains within the region. So this number is comparable with the capacity of transport systems in megacities. So this is maybe one link to megacities as a comparable destination. Interesting is also the structure of the settlements. And here you can see the settlement areas in the north of the Alps in Germany. This is Munich. So it would be this. Here's Munich, then you can see Switzerland and Italy here. And you see a white stripe here. So this is these are the Alps. And within the Alps, it's only possible to build in the valleys. So you can see different typologies of settlement structures. Also, the meaning of the roads is interesting. The Alps are a huge barrier between the North and South Europe, and so there are only a few major links going through the Alps. And one of these links is going through Tyrol, so coming from the North, from Munich. So here is Munich again. So you pass by, you're coming here. Here would be Innsbruck, it's a major city in the region. And here's the Brenner bus down to Italy. So it's also, I think, 1/3 of all cars take this route, of all cars coming from North Europe to South Europe. Some of the valleys. Some of the valleys in Tyrol are that narrow that the infrastructural lines are bunched. Here, for example, you can see the main valley of Tyrol. It's the Inn Valley, around 70 kilometers in the west from Innsbruck. And here you can see, just on the left, a federal road, then an electricity line, the River Inn. So the federal road, electricity line, the River Inn. Here you can see a bicycle path, then the highway, the railway, and another road. And just on the left and on the right, the mountains go up very, very high, so 1,500 meters just they go up. So in this area, sometimes it's really very narrow. And also, a very important point is the territory itself, because the topography plays an important role. And it influences the structure of the region enormously. So when you take the whole region, this 100%, 87% is covered by mountains. So it's not possible to build anything there. And only 13% of the whole region, we call it Dauersiedlungsraum, so it's a settlement area, including all streets, business parks, housing areas, and so on. In this settlement area, we can see that the main valley, and this is the main valley, it's the Inn Valley coming from here to here. We can see all these settlement areas in a little bit darker gray. And within the last decades, these settlement areas, they grow together. So, and this growing process is still going on, so we can talk about a Bandstadt, so a linear town in a way. And this is also a major, an important point in this region, that it's really everything grows together. But when we take a closer look to the region and to the political units, then we can see that we have 246 separated communities, so political communities. And this picture shows the emblems of these communities. And when I use the word separated, then I mean that the political power is concentrated in each unit. The mayors in Austria are very powerful, and nearly all decisions related to spatial development is taken by them. So these are the political borders within the region. But when we take a closer look how people use the space, then we can see that these political borders, they began to dissolve. And this dissolving of these borders leads to a new kind of urban settlement development, to a new kind of urbanity. It is important to know that this development is more a result of sociological and economical changes than an elaborated planning strategy. So people live in one place while they work in another, and in a third, they go there to use the cultural office. So people are moving around. So just to get an impression, here would be Innsbruck, it's the main part. This is the Inn Valley. And a lot of people, they live somewhere here, they go there shopping or working and use the cultural office in this region. So people moving around a lot. But not only the inhabitants use the space very fluently. An important role plays tourism. Through tourism, the number of people changes constantly. We call this, and this is the team of the architects I explained before, we call this growing and shrinking process elastic city. Elastic city. And I will show you what it means. Just one moment. So elastic city means that this growing and shrinking process is related to the seasons. And in summer, and especially in winter time, Tyrol city is a growing city, and in the in-between time, so in spring and in autumn, the city shrinks. So here you can see, once again, Innsbruck as the major place where people live. This would be the main valley, the Inn Valley. And especially in this region here and here, and also in the side valleys, these are the skiing resorts. So here, like this place, it's called Sölden. I will go a little bit more deeper in the fourth part. So these are the growing cities in a way. And suddenly, a place like Sölden with around 2,000 inhabitants grows to the second biggest city in the whole second biggest town in the whole area. So a little bit smaller than Innsbruck, of course. So. When we started to use the term city for the region, then we knew that for a lot of people this will be very provocant. And even now it's a problem, because so now it's 5 years, 5 years ago, where we called this region a city, and even now it is a problem, because from the political will in the region and also from the touristic perspective, the region has to be seen as a rural area. But we use the term city as a tool. We use the term because we want to show that the region of Tyrol has to be seen as one entity. And as we know, every city needs its own city map, so does also Tyrol City. So we made a city map for Tyrol City. The map is in the same visual speech and the same visual nature as many other city maps, but it helps to interpret some of the existing elements different than they seems to be in reality. So we use the way of art to draw a new picture of the whole region. So we implement new names just to change the points of view to the whole city. So and in this map, some of the existing elements, they change their meaning. So for example, the green areas, so this is the mountainous area, within this map, it's changing to city parks. So the park is more or less around the city, and the city is part of the park. So it's not possible to divide the city, so the settlement areas, from the park. They both areas are interlinked very strong. Also, as a second element, the highway. As I explained earlier, the major link from North Europe to South Europe is this link. But when we take a closer look to this, to the number of cars, then we can see that 70% of all cars in this area are coming from this region. So only 30% is this going through traffic. So all these political discussions about trend, about going through traffic, and that this region has a major problem with cars, 70% of this problem is made within the region. There would be a lot more to talk about this project, but instead of this, I will show you a movie, the Tyrol City movie. The movie is made by a Dutch filmmaker with the name Rob Gijsbers, and he made this movie as part of our project. Before I will start the movie, there is something to add. Tyrol City is a project which is situated on the border between spatial planning, so real spatial planning, and art. And this is also the way we like to work, so because it's easier to explain different topics. So, and it's also interesting that different viewpoints from outside are in relation to this project. So first, the project is discussed in the scientific discussions, and it's also like the Tyrol city map is already part of several geographical books in Austria, so school books. So you will find this map already as part of this. Then second, the project has been presented in various national and international architectural exhibitions. And third, the map itself, it is shown as a piece of art in several art exhibitions. So it's not clear, is it a real project, is it art, or something in between. And this, I think it helps a lot, because it's not a very strict line of planning. It's something in between, and this does help a lot, I think. So now I will show you the Tyrol City movie. And the idea of the movie is that you can make a virtual sightseeing tour through Tyrol City. And the movie tries to describe Tyrol City as a dynamic space where infrastructure plays an important role. So I wish you a lot of pleasure during the next 20 minutes through Tyrol City.
Thank you. Station Parkplatz. Bitte achten Sie auf die grüne Ausstiegsparkplatte.
So welcome to Tirol City. Okay, so this was a short trip through the region and a quick look on the project of Tirol City. And part of the project is not only the map and the movie, it's also the book. And in the book we explain how we think should we go on with the region and with the development project, development of the region. But this I will not explain here because it will last too long. Instead of this, I will go on with a following project because it's in a way it's in direct relation to this. Because there have been different reactions on the project Tirol City. Within the region, so within Tirol, a lot of people were really disappointed, and especially those who are in authority for planning. For them, Tirol has to be seen as a rural area, and our perception of an urbanized space is totally the opposite they want to have. Also, the political requirement is that Tirol, as a touristic region, has to be rural in future. And with the term Tirol City, we do express totally the opposite. But in the rest of Austria and also in the international context, the project was discussed widely and still it is in discussion. And as Roger mentioned before, we just won a prize. But the project is already 5 years old, so it takes a while to spread the work in a way. And So there were many different reactions and statements, but one was really very important for me personally. And it was formulated by some sociologists working at the university in Innsbruck, and they said, "This is a typical architectural project, because you as an architect, you don't look at the people. The people living in this area don't behave like urban people, and they don't want to be seen as urbanites. So it's wrong to call this region a city." So this was really important for me personally, because some scientists, they said it, so maybe it's something true in it. So this was the starting point for my PhD project. And my main question was to understand this process this impact of tourism within the region. Maybe it's this. And so I focused my further research on a specific place within the region. It's that place where this elastic city was at the biggest point. So it's a small village called Sölden. And so this is once again Innsbruck, the main valley. In valley, here is the municipality area of Sölden. It's called also Sölden, but the village itself is situated here. It's a very small place with about 2,000 inhabitants. So the municipality is called Sölden and also the village is called Sölden, just to let you know. I will give you some key data for the village. The municipality area, it's around 460 square kilometers, and it's the biggest in Austria. So it's a bigger area than Vienna. In the total area, so the whole municipality area, there are several villages, and in total there live around 4,000 inhabitants, so comparing to Vienna, 1.7 million. And it's also very important to understand the topography. So only 1.1% of the whole area is the settlement area. So 13% was in the whole region. But here, in this specific point, it's only 1.1. So it's a very small area. So this includes all streets, business parks, and so on. And the constructible area, so this area where we can really build houses, is only 0.2% of the whole area. The rest is mountain, glaciers, and forest. So this is 98.9%. Okay. In Austria, Sölden is the number one place by the number of tourists. I mean, Vienna has more, but for skiing tourists. And this is because this area is well known as a skiing destination. And in the year 2010, there had been 1.8 million overnight stands in this village, and in the whole municipality area it's 2.2. So compared to Vienna, Vienna has 8 million overnight stands, 8 to 10. This at the moment it's a little bit growing, so 10 million was in the year 2010. So just to compare, so it's really a lot. And mass tourism as a phenomenon rose up in the 60s. There are several aspects why this happened. And first of all, within this region of Tyrol, very important was the German economical miracle. I hope it's the right translation. After the Second World War. Then the second is the regulation of working time. So in the end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s, working time was regulated by 8 hours a day. Before, there was no regulation. So it means the rest of the time more or less is leisure time. So people had time to go where to go and to make holidays. And the third is the mobilization of the middle class. Because of the German economical miracle, the middle class, they could buy cars. So this was also a very important point for this starting of the mass tourism phenomenon. And especially for this region of Tyrol and this place in Sölden, these are the three major factors behind. In the year 1904, Sölden was a very small village in the Ötztal. So this is the name of the valley is Ötztal. But tourism already exists. And you already could find some inns. I think in the year 1912, already 10 small inns had been there. So it shows that tourism it's not a new phenomenon in this region. But between the First World War and after the Second World War, there was no development anymore. So up to 1913, when the First World War started, there was a lot of tourism already there, but then nothing. And it starts again in the 50s. So between the 1950s and the mid of the 60s, more and more tourists arrived. And for the summer season, at the beginning, the summer season was the more important time, but around 1960, more people arrived during the winter time. And this tendency still is holding up today. And today, Sölden is a place full of hotels and apartments. So let's take a closer look to the structure of the village. And therefore, I will show you some maps I made. In Sölden you can find, maybe it's too small, but it's not that important to understand it. It's just to get an impression what's going on there. So in Sölden you can find a lot of enterprises, local suppliers, service companies. For example, you can find 18 sports shops, tourism companies, medical practitioners, banks, post office, and a lot of other stuff. You find a lot of inns and hotels, a lot of private lodging houses, apartments for rent, and a lot of cafes, restaurants, and bars. So when I put all these layers on top of each other, there are only a few houses left which are not related to tourists. So over there are four, here are maybe 5 to 10, and here is a parking garage. But that's more or less everything. The rest is related directly to tourism as an industry. So this means that Sölden is a monofunctional space. Through tourism, Sölden became a very rich place. The economy is very powerful, and so Sölden does invest not only within the region, but also in other areas. The local investors living in Sölden, they do have a very tight economic network. So I found out they have, 72 persons are really investors in the region, and they have 82 local companies. And these companies, they create a very dense network, so everybody is linked to everybody else somehow. And so they have a very, very strong economic system in this region.
When you say linked, are they linked through supply chains or are they linked through ownership?
They are linked to ownership, but also they are linked through families, because all in all it's three families. So at the beginning, so maybe 40, 50 years ago, the families were separated, but now they are married. So they are really, it's one company more or less, the whole village. And they do not allow anybody from outside to invest in the region. So this is very specific for this place. That's not in the rest of Tyrol. A lot of other places, they do have investors from Russia or somewhere else. But this village, they want to keep everything by themselves. And so they invest outside of Sölden also. In a way, it's important for them as an advertisement. So, for example, on the border to Germany, they built a highway, how is it called, highway station, so where we can buy the fuel for the car and so on. But they build it and they add an advertisement in front, so welcome to Sölden. So, but it's at the border to Germany, so maybe 1 hour away from this region. But they also do realize bigger projects, like this one in the north of Germany, close to Hamburg. It's an indoor skiing hall called Snowdome Sölden Bispingen, so it's 20 minutes south from Hamburg. So the distance between the investor's place, so this is Sölden, it's more or less 1,000 kilometers, 900 to 1,000 kilometers by. So they invest also there. These investments are investments to attract more and more people to come to Sölden. So it's part of their ad concept. Branding is very important in the touristic sector, and Sölden is one of the most aggressive ones in the field of skiing tourism within Europe. For example, here you can see an advertisement for Sölden. It's placed on the O2 World in Berlin and was there for 1 month in the year 2010. So they really invest a lot of money just to make this advertisement and to present this place outside of the region. And of course, Germany is the major major part of people they want to attract. Places for mass tourism do invest a lot of money for advertisement, but they do also invest a lot of money in organizing events within the place. And meanwhile, skiing itself is only a short part of the whole range of products you will find in Sölden. Nowadays, an intense event calendar is essential. And in Sölden, you can find a wide range of events. Next to the opening race in the Skiing World Cup, which just had been 2 or 3 weeks ago, you will find there events like the Gay Weeks, rock concerts on top of the mountains, and a lot of other events during the year. So I will just. So they also really are very aggressive in making advertisements. Within the last 50 years, Sölden changed its structure totally. And today it's a place with very strong local global links. It is a place created for and through tourism. One important question for me was, how do the permanent residents from Sölden see their own living space? So how do they see Sölden? Do they think that this place is still a rural place? Or do they think that this is a city? That is a city. This was very important for me, and so I made some interviews. And I want to present five important statements out of these. So the first statement is done by a retired teacher, and he is in charge for the Village Chronicle. And he said, past 20 years ago, the communication within the village was totally different. We met in an inn, we played cards, we had discussions and disputes, we drank together and so on. Today, this is different, as you can go to an inn and you will not meet any locals. Or another thing, in the past, all village associations, like the Auxiliary Fire Brigade, musicians and others, they organized dancing parties and other events. Today, maybe some of the innkeepers do organize some activities for the tourists, or the ski lift company organizes a skiing race. But that's all. So it means that an internal communication between the inhabitants slowly but steadily ceases. If people want to meet, they meet in private buildings and not in an inn. Today it seems that nobody has time for anything. So the social change within the last decades is enormous. The second statement I will formulate is done by the local skiing lift operator, so the man in charge for all the skiing lifts there. And his statement is in relation to the term mass tourism and what he thinks about mass tourism. He said, "For me personally, mass tourism is not a problem. I am bound to say that this is a question of organization. We are happy when a lot of tourists arrive and also our shopkeepers like the increase in business. So, first of all, we want to survive. And this is the most important thing. And second, if you want to stand out from the crowd, you always have to do a lot to be different. In context to that, the most important thing is the question of organization. I am always comparing this issue with a soccer game. When I want to see a soccer game in Innsbruck, in the stadium, there are maybe other 15,000 people. But when I want to see a soccer game in Munich, in the Olympic Stadium, there are maybe other 70,000 people there. And the atmosphere is much better. So in this respect, Munich is much better than Innsbruck, because of the organization is different. That is the reason why I can say that mass tourism by itself is not the problem. It is the question of organization. The amount of people is not the problematic point. No, we need a certain amount to handle things different. You may say 20 beds are nice and comfortable to handle, but sometimes it is more difficult to run a smaller hotel than a larger one with 200 beds. The third statement is done by a journalist from a Swiss television company. They made a broadcast about Sölden. And the introduction words were these. For some tourists, Sölden is the dream destination for perfect skiing holidays, a guarantor for action and fun. For others, this village is considered repulsive because of the ugly houses and the dingy strip bars. And in relation to this architectural statement, I asked a hotel keeper, and he said, in relation to the architecture, "We don't have architecture here in Sölden. Here you can build anything you like. The only important thing is that you observe the rules of the building regulations." So it means the height and the distances between the other houses and the distance to the street, but that's all. And in relation to this, I also asked the mayor what he thinks about the architecture in his place. And therefore, I explained it also earlier, but I will do it again because it's really important. The mayors in Austria, they are very powerful. They decide more or less everything in their own village. There is not any higher decision maker. And he answered to my question about the architecture in Sölden. Well, you know, what should I regulate? If a landlord comes to my office and he shows me his ideas, then I think that I am not better at designing than he is. So I said to myself that for sure it is not possible that my preferences in architectural design are the principles for the aesthetic quality for all the buildings in Sölden. I mean, I have a good sense what is good architecture. But yet, sometimes I say, I don't like the style of the building, but you follow all building regulations, and so you are allowed to build it. And this is the reason why Sölden does not look like a traditional Tyrolean village. In the last years, different architectonic styles were realized in Sölden. As one example, I will show very quickly the transformation of one building from an inn. So this is a picture from 1934 from the inn Hotel oder Gasthof Sonne. In the 50s, it looked like this, and maybe you just take a look just here. They make some changes, so they made small changes more or less. The next step to the end of the 60s, it's related to this part, so they add a lounge. And then, till the 1988, it's more or less the same. So they changed the facade a little bit in this area, the entrance is different. Just to go back, so this is the changing in this time. But in the year 2003, they decided to change it radically. And they did this. And so you can't find anything left from the old building. And today it looks like this. So this is one example of, but it stands for many others. And this is the reason why Sölden as a touristic place mutated from a rural village into a turbanized space. A space where you can find elements from the past superimposed by elements from today. So it's this more or less. You can see elements from the past, maybe this house, the church and so on, but you also will find a lot of elements from today. So elements from the past, this is not in Sölden, just to explain. Elements from the past would be something like this, a farmer's house, and they mutated into a hotel like this, so this is in Sölden. Or an element from the past is also a barn with nice elements, nice landscape, and it mutates to a go-go bar. It's more or less the same architectonic style. Then they also use elements from the past, like from the Greek temples, to create nice entrances to another go-go bar. And also elements, as you have seen before, this is also an old farmer's house, not a restaurant. So also the interior is totally different, but it's always in this relation to the nice elements and this very easy to grab and easy to understand decoration elements. So if you pass by with a car on this house, you do not need very long to understand this because you have seen these pictures very often. So it must be very nice there because wooden houses are always very nice in the Alps, something like this. And with these images, they work a lot. And also, what I also think it's really important to understand that global elements are, they also take part not in only in Sölden, but everywhere around the world. And I think this is, the main force behind this is Disneyland and also the film industry in Hollywood, because they they show pictures all day long with in the soap operas and so on, where the decoration is very nicely. So this is the main street in Disneyland, and this is also the many people here in the United States and so on. They really want to have city centers similar to Disneyland because this looks very nice and it's, you can walk around and so on. So this is full built. The ideal model and the ideal vision for that. And also some elements are coming to Tyrol as well, but they use it in a little bit different way. So it's also this very nicely shaped hotel and so on. As an architect and urban planner, there are many questions for me to ask. And one of the most interesting is, how can we go on with places like Sölden to make them sustainable? Sustainable in an economic, ecological, and in a social way. Very often, places for mass tourism were seen as, in a way, excluded places. Places which are there, but which are not, in a way, part of the rest of the region. It seems that they are their own engines, and so they are not in directly linked to the rest of the region. So when you look at those places, it's very often that regional development projects, they are for the region around, but not directly for these mass tourism places, especially in the region where I live in Austria. But also in the scientific context, it's in a way like this. It's a little bit excluded. And Christian Schmidt wrote in the book Switzerland and Urban Portrait, there's not a lot about these mass tourism places, but there's one small paragraph, and he wrote there, "Alpine resorts are urban areas within the Alps, but they are not part of any city network, nor part of any metropolitan region." So it's also, in a way, this excluded context. But I think this is wrong. And we should understand these places as part of the whole system. And in our case, I would argue that Sölden has to be seen as part of the whole region, so as part of Tyrol City, because then it's easier to think about the future of these places. Because then Sölden and the whole Ötztal Valley is a specific part of Tyrol City. Then it is easier to accept that Sölden is in a way a kind of in-between place, neither a rural space nor an urban space. It is a place where rural and urban elements superimpose each other, and both do have specific impacts on each other. So this shift in the perspective is maybe one possible starting point for discussions about the future of sustainable tourism in the Alps. Thank you for your attention.
We have a few minutes for questions and comments.
Hi, I'm Mr. Director, I apologize.
No problem.
Most of it, I guess. I want to comment on 2 points. One is what you said at the end with the critique of Christian Schmidt's quote about not being part of the metropolitan, not being part of the metropolitan region. I fully agree, and you know, I think that when we look here in Toronto, we have a similar example of the cottage country that is also part of the larger city of Toronto, though it is somewhat like certain. When you go out there, you're in a different world, in a natural world, or you in a pretend natural world. So one comment. The other comment is, of course, can't resist it. So I don't know what you said at the beginning. So I'm very apologetic about this. But of course, I can't resist, you know, going back in history, because Sölden was, when I was an active skier, was one of the training camps we had.
It's still.
So that's 30 to 20 years ago. And of course, all the quotes that you gave us is from a time period before that. And And so in my imagination, Berlin was exactly the place where it was very, very homey, very normal, a good place to train because everybody was very close with everybody. You saw the locals and you could interact with the locals. And while you were plugged in into the system, you didn't feel plugged in, you didn't feel as a stranger. So I find it very interesting. So because I'm going to have to go back to a certain and see what it's like today, go to one of the strip joints and check.
I mean, in a way, that guy I mentioned before, the lift operator, he owns one of the biggest hotels in, or his sister owns one of the biggest hotels in Sölden, and he is living in the hotel. He doesn't have his own house, so his living room is the living room where all the guests are. So in this context, it's very easy to get in contact with him. So maybe you still will have the same feeling that you can link in very, very fast. But yeah, just as a comment for this. I don't know.
Okay.
It's just a start.
So I have a question though. So I mean, in the past, let's say 10, 15, 20 years, it's hard to separate the economic sustainability of a city from migration, of workers.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any, because you probably did forecasts for the region, are there any forecasts in regard with migration of workers for the area, and if there are any, can predict something like this? How can you reconcile it with the particular network, a closure of the businesses you are mentioning? And how will this area look like? Because I'm seeing that, okay, so they are trying to make some kind of visual adjustment, you know, by disneyfying the area, but I think there's been a lot of resistance in getting, you know, migrant workers in the area. But how can you reconcile those two issues?
So you mean migration as working migration?
Yeah, because yeah? It's a tourist area. Usually in tourist okay. area, you
yeah.
find a lot of...
More or less all working people there are from East Germany nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of the 90s, they came from ex-Yugoslavia. But because of the war, nobody came there, so they had to search for other workers. And in East Germany, there was no work, so still a lot of people from a very specific area in East Germany, they come to Sölden and other Tyrolean places to work. So there is a lot of working migration. But they stay there more or less just for the winter season, and they go back during the summertime. Only a few, they stay the whole year. And it's in a way, sometimes it's very hard to find a good cook. And so a lot of hotels, they pay the cook the whole year, but they just have to work in the winter time. But that they come back also in the next season, they pay them the whole year. So there is migration, a lot of working migration, but only a small percentage they stay in this region. The rest goes away or goes back to the place where they are from.
So they don't have plans for settlement there, or they cannot because at the point they didn't really have to settle.
Mm. Very often it's like this, that if a landlord from Sölden, if he has a problem with the bank and so on, and he has to sell something, it happens, of course. Then this economical network I showed before, they say, okay, this time you will buy this house, and the next time I will take the next house. So they buy all the stuff, and the only way to get implemented in the region is to marry somebody. That's the only way, more or less. But otherwise it's more or less not possible, or people look very precisely that it's not possible that you are able to stay there, in a way. Yeah.
I found it very interesting that you mentioned
mentioned again some of the questions which arise here several times about what is urban behavior and what is rural behavior. And we had this in the suburban talk and the other talks too. I tried to sum up what you define as urban behavior or as urban, and it is like density of people, of traffic, of buildings, and specific. That's what came out of your movie. Then specific objects which you define as urban, like malls or Disneyland or certain architecture, and also mobility. And then you say that rural is like the density of networks between people. Everybody knows everybody. And in marriage, it seems that everything belongs to three families. That's like very, from an anthropological point of view, it's very rural that families control the whole economy. So I think looking at these definitions, it's really open what could be defined as urban and what could be defined as rural.
Well, that's one of the hard questions to answer. In a way, the movie we made 6 years ago, and at that time, nobody in our team was really thinking about what is urbanity. And for us, as an architect, and when you study architecture, urbanity is very, or urban systems are related to infrastructure within, or very often related. And for us, it was a tool to show it that there is a lot of infrastructure and people use this infrastructure, like getting on the lift, using the streets and so on, as urban people do. So in a way, it's vague, totally vague. But I think places like Sölden, they are they are not a rural system by itself, but also not an urban system. So this, I think it's this superimposition of these two systems you can see there quite easily in a way. So I'm not sure. So turbanism is for me an expression which explains it quite precisely, and also this term of superimposition of rural and urban systems. So it's more this for me. Yeah.
But that's precisely my question. What is the urban system and what is the rural system?
Yeah.
How do you define it?
For me,
the density of infrastructure makes something urban. But then we see, for instance, in urban neighborhoods, we see a lot of elements which you would contribute to a rural system.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's also in like urban elements are for me these go-go bars. Urban elements are for me all this the number of shops in this place. I mean, it's just a number that you can find 18 sport shops, but no other shops or very less other shops. So it's very monostructural place. For a urban system, I think it would be important to have a lot of other shops too, to have diversity. But this place has no diversity, so I'm not sure if I can. So for me, for an urban system, diversity is important. In this case, I don't know if this is an urban system. But from the perspective of the infrastructure, the transportation systems and also go-go bars and so on, it is an urban system. So I don't know exactly what it is, and it's hard to I do not have a clear definition what is an urban system and what not, because in these places it's not obvious.
But it seems to me that it depends a bit on your theoretical approach, what you see. I mean, you know, if you show the picture of certainly 1963, 1964, my family went on vacation on the other side of the mountain. And so, I remember that landscape. To travel from the Frankfurt area to that place meant that you actually had the experience of living in an entirely different world. And still, you were connected by the same modes of transportation. You went on the train in Frankfurt, got on out, you were transported to the hotel or the hostel, whatever you were staying in. But then you were in this fairyland. But it was a fairyland. Something was entirely different from the industrial cities of the north. It was exactly the Wirtschaftswunder, what you were describing. Now you go, and you actually don't want it to be different. When you go there and you don't have internet access, you go home. Right? When you go there and the cow shits in front of your hotel, you ask the people, which is actually now happening. People are asking for the rural to disappear because there's too much rural. Much of that other bother that they didn't come to certain for, because they came to certain for basically the same life that they lived in the other place. So that is one sort of thing where you can really say that the urban has superimposed itself in many ways. But the other is, if you take another theory, this is sort of an experiential approach, an anthropological, some biographical approach. If you take a topological approach, and I agree with you over Christian. I think you're right with your critique over Christian. But I do think that it doesn't really matter whether these places are geographically in another area, because functionally they're the same. This ski hill is exactly the same as the artificial ski hill in Dubai or in Hamburg. Functionally, not aesthetically, not in terms of the experience, but but functionally, the end of the subway line is the same as the end of the Glen Allen line. It doesn't make a difference, right? So, from a topological point of view, how places are connected and what kinds of things are being connected, these are urban places. I don't see the difference.
Is a question for Christian, do you think that they European economic crisis will be a factor for connecting, let's say, a new interregional network development? I mean, it will be a strong factor. We have yet to see what's going to happen with this crisis. Isn't that odd? What's your
opinion? I mean, there are several levels of this international networks and planning strategies. The European Union has a strong force for regional developments, but the political system within the several national systems are totally different. So in this case, like I explained before, the mayors are really very powerful, so they decide everything in their own region. But there are several links in between up to this European context. So there's a regional government as well, but they do not make a lot of regional planning. So this link in between is missing, more or less. Or it's not very strong, I think. And the economical crisis... At the moment, there are two strong forces against each other. One is that people want to separate, and one is that people want to work together. So I think the working together is the more powerful also for the development for these regions, and also in the economical sector, in the touristic sector, in the agricultural sector. It's not possible to survive as a national state in Europe anymore. We have to work together, I think. But it's maybe you can explain more in detail in this direction. But I think it's really it's the only way we have to work together, and also to think about these phenomena, about tourism and about sustainable development of the nature and economical sectors in these regions. We have to think more globally than just from this very specific point from one village out. But at the moment it's like this, because they have this very strong local economical network, and they do not need the others at the moment, because they have a lot of money, so they can decide everything they want. And if they want to have a new road, then they go to the government of Tyrol and they say, well, you have to build it, because we have that much tourists, we need it, you have to pay it, and they will pay for that, because they are in a way depending on these very strong economical places.
And what about the other cities? I know you focus here, right?
But yeah.
Are you also thinking to do the same in other countries nearby?
When I go back to Austria, this will be in one month more or less, I already applied for another project, and it's already through. I can do it, so I will compare two other skiing resorts with this one, and the three skiing resorts, because they have different typologies in a way. So this is mass tourism. Then I will focus on one place where only the VIP people go there. So this is Lech. And I will focus on a place in Switzerland where the World Economical Forum is situated. So this is a global place, VIP and mass tourism. And these three places I will compare. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm afraid we have to end it here. Thanks again. Is there access to the film on YouTube, or do you have it somewhere in the public domain that people want to show it again? Or see it?
Yeah, I have to put it on YouTube. I didn't until now, but I have to, and I will do. But the book, it's possible to download on www.tyrolcity.com. And the movie, it's possible to see it on the screen at the moment, but I don't know exactly. Maybe we have to put it on YouTube. I don't know exactly. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. I just want to make my usual announcements. Please come on Thursday afternoon, actually evening, to the North York Modernist Architecture Forum at North York City Hall in the North York Civic Center in the Council Chambers with Doug Youngster from the City Institute of Urban Studies, Laura Taylor, City Institute, and yes, Jeremy Demach, Steve Logan, also City Institute, and others, and it's moderated by Christopher Newman. It's about politics, it's about the heritage of modernist architecture in North York, and please also come on November 30th to our next city talk by our other fellow from Christian Metke, who's going to give a presentation on his research that he's been doing 5 years here on transportation in the Toronto region. And finally, we have another city seminar on the 2nd of December, Friday, 12:30 in 305 York Lanes by Daniel Dabé, Domesticating the Suburbs, Housing, Space Production, Architecture, Change to the Marches of Hanoi during the late French colonial era. You're all welcome. Come back to the bills. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I stay here at the visiting fellow at the City Institute, and I apply to stay until the end of December.
I have to go back. What do you think of
traveling? It's super nice. And, I really I'm looking, or I'm focused more on the suburban areas. This I really think, in a way, it's comparable. I don't know exactly how, but the city is.
Here we're talking about density, high density. That's our agenda. And we look up to Europe in general and places like Austria. We look up to them in many instances. Mm-hmm. So that's the dream, you know, for us.
Okay.
And then,
thank you very much.
Well, it is very inspiring. I wish more of you came and went to other places in Toronto. Did you go to other places to give presentations?
No, no. Maybe there is a chance.
Oh, well, I got a lot of
questions. I thought so many people would be so you know, if you were interested, the Unitarian Church does a lot of presentations because people like to travel. So the churches is a venue for you to promote your work. Definitely, I would just email it to them and send it your link to them.